to the Animation Happy Hour,
a podcast where we talk about breaking into the animation industry over a couple of drinks.
All opinions and views expressed in this podcast are solely our own and are not representative of the companies for whom we work. My name is Ben.
I'm Garrett.
And I'm Katie, and we are all currently feature film animators working in Los Angeles. So today, we are sipping on a drink that my husband came up with. Do you want to intro it?
I did come up with this. I came up with the notion of... So the episode is Day in the Life of a CG Canimator, because we all have various cans of different things right now. So my good buddy Garrett over there has a... What do you have?
Two chicks, tequila, lemon, and lime cocktail. And I do agree, it's good.
Yeah. Oh, good, great.
That was a, this is somewhat of a clean out the fridge drink because my family right. was recently visiting and left a bunch of random drinks. Sorry, Garrett, but also you're welcome.
Yeah, oh, it's pretty tasty. And Katie and I are currently have, what is this, a...
Tequila Paloma.
Yes.
In a can. Water. It's very nice. It's yeah, very it's low impact.
So yeah, all brought to you by our local grocery store. Whatever
Pavilions,
they had in the
shout out.
Drink session. Yeah. That's right. But yeah, awesome. Anytime. I was going to try to transition into a joke, but I didn't do it well. Something about Canimator versus Cantimator in it, but it wasn't there. I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah. The alternative was Daiquiri in the Life, but that is a lot more work. So here we
and
are.
And Day in the Life of an Anna Mojito.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Anyway, very clever puns. Stuff going on.
So yeah, what is our episode, guys? If you can't guess.
It is Day in the Life of a CG Animator. So yeah, so we've had this Day in the Life series going for a little while that we keep chipping away at and are trying to get through the whole pipeline. Someday, I think right now we're on track for 16 years from now. We will have it all figured out, but that's okay. So yeah, today we're going to talk about CG animators, and as luck would have it, that's us three.
That's us.
So that's why we don't have a special guest,
exactly,
aside from ourselves.
Yeah, it would be too hard to pick one. We have so many amazing friends and coworkers that I feel like we would just offend everybody if we didn't pick them.
Well, yeah. We just bring them all on at the same time.
Yeah, actually, maybe we should have just done a big round robin at work or something. But
too late. It's us.
Too late. It's us.
Yeah, so hopefully. And we might do like a 2D animator or like hand-drawn animation thing too. This is specifically more for CG animation. And as you guys know, we all work in feature films, so it'll be more specifically with that. And another thing to mention is Ben has some supervising experience now, and that might provide interesting answers that are different because he has the supervisor side. So,
yeah,
I guess the days in his life are a little different.
Days of our lives. Oh, yeah.
That's what we should have called it. Great show.
Great show.
But yeah, I think if we follow the format of our other episodes, we have some questions that we usually repeat. So we'll start with the very basic, explain it like I'm five. What is an animator?
Why do I have this tendency? I want to like ask ChatGPT and just see what it says. Sorry. I don't know why I said that, but what is an animator, guys? We make things move.
That's true.
Oh, wow. Weird.
Yeah, maybe we should have decided who would go first. But no, this is good. Unscripted. Yeah. So basically, I'll dive in. You guys help me. So an animator, if you were to compare it to a live action set, the animator is kind of the actor. For CG animation, we're basically like a puppeteer working in a computer. So that's in the simplest terms. We usually have... general direction of like what a particular shot is and maybe some dialogue, or if it's pantomime, no dialogue. And then we create a character performance by moving the individual parts of a digital puppet's body. And that's what we do.
Yeah. I just like that phrase, digital puppet's body. But yeah, we're responsible for every breath, every blink, every... dance move or action fight scene, whatever it is, and the character picks up a prop, a cup, or whatever, we do that.
Yeah. And I guess there can be, sorry, Garrett, did you?
No.
Okay.
No, no, no.
I guess there can be a little bit of a gray zone, particularly in the CG world, which maybe we'll touch on this more later on. But especially when you get, so it's obviously, it's not like cloth simulation or hair simulation, anything like that, or effects. Or, and then we have a great department at work called Tech Anim that does a lot of stuff that's like kind of similarly, that's overlaps with animation, like, you know, sculpting silhouettes and some really cool stuff. And depending on the character design, if it's like a, you know, really, I don't know, for example, if you had a character with like really long limbs and they were flying around and, you know, some of that could be like, it's such a ridiculous example, but like if they had really long tentacles or something or whiskers or something that could be, integral to a character's performance, sometimes like the line between like character effects or tech anim and CG character animation can be kind of blurry, and sometimes it's kind of a collaboration between the two. But that's kind of more in the weeds. Broadly speaking, we're just moving the bodies and stuff.
I think digital puppet is a good way actually of explaining, because I don't know if, about you guys, but I've definitely gotten a lot of like confused questions kind of from family members of like, what do you draw every frame? But it is, I feel like as a CG animator, it's more akin to like stop motion. It feels more like similar to stop motion where you're like moving a thing frame by frame. Not exactly, but.
Yeah, very similar, where the digital puppets have a control for every single joint and most muscles and all of that. So yeah, very, very similar. Yeah, correct me up when you mentioned drawing, because I recently had this experience. I'll just tell a very quick anecdote where I went to Disneyland with my family and we met Mirabelle. And then my mom, bless her heart, decided to tell Mirabelle, Katie drew Isabella, your sister. And I was like, oh boy. Mirabelle probably thinks I'm like drawing like fan art of Isabella, and this is like really weird. It's not quite what I do. Actually, I've never drawn a picture of Isabella in my life. But yes, I did control and manipulate her digital puppet's body.
That's true. Yeah. I don't hear what
So that's what Katie said to Mirabelle. It was more manipulating her body.
No, as you're saying that, I think it's also maybe good to mention here that there are plenty of CG animators who like literally can't draw, and there's a thing that that's a confusion point too. And I think I wish I knew that in school, that you can do CG animation as a career without like being this like amazing artist. And it's okay. It's okay for that purpose.
Yeah. So that's broad strokes what an animator is. Garrett's cracking me up. I hope I'm not cutting you off, right?
No.
Okay. Sounds good.
Never.
So we are going to dive into what an average day looks like. I'll kick it. Garrett, you open your eyes in the morning. What next?
Average day? I will tell you. You guys can help me out.
Sure, yeah.
So I guess we can start with like the normal day-to-day, like 9 to 6 type of part, where there's no kind of overtime now. It's just like a normal day. For me, it would be, you know, going into the studio around 9, grabbing some coffee.
What are you wearing?
I am wearing a spandex.
Sounds like a creepy AOL Instant Messenger message. What are you
wearing? I will say it's maybe a good point, because it's like very casual to
that's
wear
true.
T-shirts.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Ben's chuckling.
No. That's why I thought it was a legitimate point, but I think it's, obviously I wouldn't have worded it that way.
very casual wear, like jeans, t-shirt. Sweatshirt, whatever. I go in. I would probably, like, what I personally do is I kind of organize my, like, I go to my computer, organize my workspace, like, in terms of, like, where's my calendar? Where's my Slack messenger? Where's kind of that stuff? If I don't know how in the weeds we want to get here, but I would also set my to-do list for, like, okay, what am I doing today? What's my weekly goal? I'd look at Shotgun, I can say that, right? That's
software.
Yeah. Public software.
Yeah, public software to like check your due dates and stuff. So kind of just basically reorganize myself for the day. Then I would clean up my emails, kind of get all that like front boring work out of the way. And then I would sort of decide what I want to do. But before I shouldn't launch into the whole day. I feel like you guys, I want to hear your morning routines. I feel like it would be better.
That was great.
Like, go by that.
Oh, sure.
Metric, or I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Super similar. I wake up, I often work out before work. Usually I'm not good at working out unless I do it before. Usually I'll miss it if I don't do it in the morning. And then, yeah, have light breakfast, get coffee, all of that. Sorry, there's a siren going by. Sorry, I don't know if it'll pick it up. Yeah, and then, very similar. Definitely clean out emails first and check Slacks and then launch my scene. Sometimes that can take a couple minutes depending on the software we're opening. And check my to-do list, check deadlines, all that. So yeah, super, super similar in terms of mornings.
Yeah, same here. I don't have much to add. I'll usually take a look at the calendar just to see if sometimes really late at night or after I've left the previous day, stuff will get kind of rejiggered here or there. So sometimes randomly you'll come in and be like, oh shoot, now there's a meeting at 9:30 that I didn't know about. But other than that, yeah, same. Just kind of come in, get organized.
Drop my lunch off that we packed in the refrigerator.
That's right.
All those little things.
Yeah.
Depending on the morning, on Mondays, we have bagels. And so that can be a nice time to get a bagel and have coffee with coworkers. There is a pretty good culture of having coffee together in the morning, which is nice. And
so then I guess I'll ask you guys in real time as we transition from, so we're in, we got settled. Do we want to treat this like we're currently working on shots? Like, are we like jumping in as if this is like, I mean, our typical day is we already have shots that we're working on, and then maybe we can briefly, cause we've covered dailies and past things. Maybe we can still touch on that, but let's act as if we're halfway through shots anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that makes sense. Cause that's the average.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's cool.
So then I would say, so once I'm situated and stuff, if I have no meetings or anything going on, I'll then just start working. And so for this example, I'll say maybe I'm working on a series of shots that I've already shown the director once and I got some notes on and I'm working on the notes. So I usually am going from, so I'm opening up, I'm either in Maya or in Presto or whatever software. I'll usually kind of reacquaint myself with what I was last working on. Usually when I leave for the previous day, I save my file and then I'll put like a little, you know, 1 to 5 word description of what I was last working on or like what I was focusing on as a little hint to myself the next day, like what to tackle or look at first. So I start trying to implement the notes and get my shots to a state where I feel comfortable bringing them to rounds and then seeing if I can have the go-ahead to bring the shots back into dailies to get them approved or get more notes on them or something.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Are you, for both of you guys, do you find you're better in the morning or in the afternoon or at night for like your main work, like animating, like getting the most stuff done? I'm curious to hear. Is there no different?
Yeah, I think I do try to reserve like the big mentally taxing things for morning. I just feel fresher. And it has made me ponder whether I want to shift my lunch hour because I feel productive in the morning. And then lunch always feels like it comes too soon. And I'm like, oh no. And it kind of breaks. I think I'm more lethargic after lunch. Yeah. But yeah, that's me. What about you?
Yeah. Well, as Katie knows, I'm a horrible morning person. So I actually usually get into a little better flow in like late afternoon or so. Maybe in that zone. Yeah.
Gotcha. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
I think I'm similar to you where it's the morning. I feel like I'm, yeah, I do my best work in the morning. And then after lunch, it's kind of like a lull. But then I feel like around like 4 or 5, I sort of pick back up.
I think I'm similar. Yeah. That's funny.
But that's a good point too. Like where everyone, I feel like I've talked to so many different people about this and there's so many different answers. So what's nice about, one of the things I love about being an animator, and we'll talk about this later, but is the fact that if you're working a nice job, they kind of give you the trust to kind of work how you want.
Yeah, like,
you
know, manage your time.
Manage your time and stuff. So you can kind of figure that out for yourself. How you work best.
Yeah. Totally. And like for an example, like I feel like if I know I just got a bunch of notes, I need to do major shot surgery or I need to shoot new reference or something, I like hugely prefer to handle that stuff in the morning. And it's very hard to like get those notes in the afternoon and then like start chipping away at them. Whereas I know some people are totally different and they, when they get notes, they want to dive in right away, but sometimes I need to digest them a little longer. And then I'll just like, there are certain things we can do that are a little less taxing, like cleaning arcs or cleaning curves or in the graph editor. And when I know my brain is taxed, I'll like switch to those things. Or I'm like, okay, this is doesn't require quite as much brain power as totally ripping my shot apart. So I can do those, yeah, in the afternoon or right before closing or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I have a potential something to pitch to you guys. Do you think it's worth now transitioning to talking about? I know in past episodes we've talked about dailies. I don't think we've talked about rounds a whole lot.
Sure, yeah.
Do you guys want to talk about like what rounds is and like working toward rounds? And
yeah, it's a good idea.
If I've like already shown my shots, or sometimes even if I'm just still working on my first look or blocking pass, you will show in rounds. So rounds is showing to like animation leadership, but it's all kind of still within the animation department. So you're not actually showing the director yet. You're just showing the head or heads of animation and any supervisors or leads or whatever. And it is kind of, in broad strokes, it's kind of a check-in to be like, hey, this is kind of how this is going. Do you guys think it's going in the right direction? Is there anything big you think I should be doing differently or something I should be really concentrating time on before we show it to the directors? So it's just kind of a big check-in in a time for supervisors and heads or whatever to give you feedback.
Yeah. And rounds is also for when your shot has already been creatively approved by directors and you're just trying to bring it to final like polish also. So, so it can also just be kind of getting all of the very, very nitty gritty polished notes from, leadership. So you'll see in a rounds list that shots are in all different states of in terms of work in progress versus finaling, and it's just a hodgepodge.
We should probably say that all of this stuff can be slightly different depending on the studio you're at, but these are kind of broad strokes. Most studios do some version of this, this sort of thing.
I don't know how you guys feel too, but I feel like rounds is a little less pressure than showing in dailies.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you typically, hopefully you have a good relationship with your supervisor or your heads or whoever. And it's slightly more casual and it's kind of like, this is how the shot's going. And everyone's an animator, so they know what they're looking at. And in directors, it's, you know, in dailies, you can be showing a room with like a ton of people that you don't know in different departments. And it's like very official and this, like, scary room. So rounds is a little more fun usually.
And speaking of that, you guys don't know what's coming.
Oh no.
But when we talked about dailies, we did a quick improv of dailies.
God.
Did you really? Did you?
Benjamin.
We don't have to, but what do you guys think? Would you like to do a quick improv of rounds? What it's like?
You never join improv and then you always have improv.
Wait, you should be in it.
You should be in it.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, I'll be in it. So, okay. So do you want roles assigned or do you want to? So somebody needs to be the animator. Katie?
Garrett.
Garrett?
Fine.
Garrett's animator.
And you're the supervisor.
Okay, I'll be the supervisor.
And then I do nothing.
So that means, Katie, you will have a dual part of production coordinator and head of animation. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Okay.
So
I'm peeing my pants already.
Yeah. So Garrett's showing.
I'm nervous.
Okay. So I'm the soup. Katie's coordinator slash.
Wait,
okay.
Is this rounds or daily? Sorry.
Rounds.
Rounds.
Rounds specifically.
Oh, no, I'm casual. I'm like, yeah, hey, yeah. Ben, what's up, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'll set the stage. So
I'm cutting this off.
No, that was great. So I'll set the stage. So what usually happens is, like, everybody knows rounds will be at, you know, let's say
3:30 p.m.
So that means probably, you know, sometime in the morning or before 3:30 p.m., Garrett signed his shots up for rounds. And we'll say in this example, it's like in-person rounds, because a lot of stuff these days are hybrid, so you could just do it all over Zoom. But in this case, it'll be in-person rounds. So we, myself, Katie as the head of animation.
And the coordinator.
And the coordinator. Are all going to go
walk
to
around.
Garrett's desk,
yeah.
Yeah, to check in on him since he signed up his thing already.
Did we mention that rounds can be a thing where you did you say that where they can so your supervisors and heads can like literally come to your desk?
To your
I did
computer.
Not really. So yeah, it can happen both ways. Sometimes there's like quote unquote group rounds where like all the supervisors and stuff are just in a room and you go to that room and show them. Or it can be like kind of a traveling rounds where they go to people's desks.
Supervisor based. Yeah. Yeah.
So in this case, I guess we'll do a traveling rounds thing. We're all going to go. Cool. So Katie, the coordinator,
So
I'm just sitting in the soup room. Do we have anything for rounds today?
Oh, yeah. It looks like Garrett Lewis signed up.
Oh, okay. Is he working through like director notes, I think?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, let's go over.
You should talk about how much you hate me before you come.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding. Sorry. Okay. Bad joke.
So, knock, knock, knock.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Garrett.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going, Garrett?
It's going good.
Good.
Yeah, how's your day going? Just keep this going.
It's great.
Great.
Yeah, it's good. Do you have a bagel this morning?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, bagel. Good. Yeah, me too.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Lox, cream cheese.
Wow. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So just to get you guys up to speed, I don't know, just to remind you of where this was at. This was conditionally approved, but the director had some notes about the eye line being a little off at the end. They felt that the eye line was a little too kind of like wall-eyed. And also just like adding a shrug at frame like 20. And then I also did some polishy things on the on the feet. But yeah, I would love all your thoughts and if you addressed it.
Awesome.
Sounds great.
Now, should we say quick, Katie, you're now going to transition. You're the head of animation.
Got it.
Because a lot of times the coordinators don't say a whole lot in rounds.
Yeah,
they just kind of take notes. And
I actually interpreted you reacting to me as the head.
Oh,
okay. Well, it's perfect.
Bringing
it's
the energy.
Katie's acting was on. It was okay. Perfect. Okay. So we'll say Garrett presses play.
I'll probably play two or three times before anybody says anything.
I'm sweating right now. I'm sweating. I'm thinking it's horrible. They hate it.
Say, okay, cool. I might walk up and be like, yeah, I think you addressed the note well. Like, I like the little shrug you put in there. I'm wondering in this section around like frame 40, I like what you did with the eye line, but maybe we can maybe just like tweak the eyelids a little bit to support that. I don't know. What do you think about that, Katie?
I was thinking the same thing because the directors, they're pretty picky about walleye. So I think, yeah, maybe the eyelid support will help. And maybe just the screen left eye, maybe we'll just nudge it just a pixel or two to the left. Just a little bit, but it's super close. And yeah, I agree. Yeah. I love the shrug.
Awesome. Yeah,
that makes
great.
Sense.
And honestly, everything looks great. I don't know that this is something we necessarily have to see again.
Yeah.
So I think, or if you feel the same, Katie.
Yeah, I would say just shoot off a render if you don't mind and double check the eye line. Sometimes it can seem a little different in the render, but I trust your judgment. So if you, take a look at that and then.
And me being the insecure animator would always be like, well, I'm going to show you guys anyways.
Okay,
you don't want it.
No worries. Yeah.
Actually, it's true. That does often happen. This is Ben talking now, where sometimes.
Okay, now we're not in the improv.
If they say that, but we're not done with the improv.
Wait, what?
We haven't said goodbye yet. But yeah, sometimes like if they say like, oh, we don't have to see it again or whatever, you can sometimes like Garrett or whoever, you can still like send a Slack and be like, hey, I'm just about to publish this. This
yeah.
is
yeah. I feel like I'll word it like, oh, just so I can sleep a little easier at night. Yeah. Like, yeah. Here's the final render.
Yeah. Okay. Back to improv.
Oh.
All right. But yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, it looks great. Thanks, Garrett.
Shot looks awesome, Garrett. And you handled great this job. Changes really well.
Thank
good
you so
job.
Much. Thank you, guys. I
glad
like
you enjoyed
notes.
That bagel.
Oh, the bagel was so good. Yeah. Bagel was so good.
All right. See you around.
Oh, see ya.
All right. Bye, guys.
Clip, clop, clip, clop, clip,
clop. Oh, my gosh.
Amazing improv. But I actually want to say something. This made me think of something. Like, first of all, the way you guys interacted and the way we had this interaction isn't, like, super far off from like, yeah. how it goes, which makes me realize, like, the people we're working with are like the nicest people.
Yeah, and that's another they thing really that, are
like,
nice.
I'm spoiling this for later, but I feel like people in animation, if you're working, obviously, like a job that you like and it fits, I feel like people are just so nice. And,
yeah.
you know, there's a way to say things in a nice way. And I don't know. I'm very grateful that people are nice.
For sure. I guess now that you said that, though, I feel like I do need to caveat that it doesn't always, sometimes it is like more uncomfortable and like you can get more notes and stuff. We don't have to improv it, but but I would say, but it is very much just especially rounds, even more so than dailies, is very much a conversation, or it should be. So like Garrett said before, it's animators talking to animators. Mm-hmm, so it's really like a gut check. So it's really just a conversation and it can go both ways. I mean, there's been multiple times where I'll show in rounds and it's mainly just because I have a question and I'm like kind of stuck or, you know, so it's kind of there for what you need it for.
Yeah. And there might be times too where your supervisor wants to draw over something too. And, and they'll say, oh, hey, like, you know, I'll do some draw overs at my desk and send those over to you later. Especially for policy stuff too, they'll do that. And it can be a much bigger conversation too if in the off chance you haven't addressed a node or there's some sort of disagreement about acting choice or
And it can be the case too where honestly everybody in the room is like stuck between a couple different ideas or something and they're like, okay, now it just seems like this is a director call. Let's throw it in the dailies as is and see what the director says.
That is very true. Because too many kind of cooks and with one shot, that can happen.
Yeah. And nowadays, you brought up how we did our improv in person, quote unquote, but we do have hybrid. So so rounds can be a Zoom call, absolutely. Yeah. Or maybe you're even in the studio, but your supervisor's at home. So you Zoom from your desk in the studio. It's a whole mix now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing improv experience.
Wow. Thank you so great job. Great job.
Yeah. Should we talk a little bit about like some of the one-off days, like maybe the day you get issued or the day you final or I don't know, that kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be great.
Anybody?
Oh.
I can talk about issuing. I guess in an ideal world, you get an email from your supervisor and or your coordinator and they'll say, hey, you've been assigned on this sequence. Here's the kind of, and they send you this document about what the shots that you're cast are. And then you look at that. And in an ideal world, you have time to sort of like take a look at the shots and layout, see the whole sequence and layout or ideally storyboards too, because you get a good sense of it. And what I like to do for those moments is again, in an ideal world, if I get issued something and my issuing meeting with the director is like maybe the next day or something, I like to look at that, formulate my questions, like if anything I'm confused by. I even sometimes go as far as like bringing it into a drawing software and kind of like almost animating a little, like not like almost thumbnailing.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And because I find that when I do that, things come up like little dumb technical things.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, like the right hand, is that going to be on the basket? That doesn't make sense with the layout. Oh, so then you can iron all that stuff out. And then you would go to this issuing meeting, which is with the directors and with all the people, the supervisors and everything. And when it's your turn, you go up and the director will launch you on the intention of the shot. Mm-hmm. It's your chance to kind of ask all of the questions you have. about it. It's a really important time, honestly. We've been talking about it recently, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's essential to, yeah, get everything you need from the director and walk away ideally from issuing knowing exactly what you need to do and you know what the director wants and you can start working. But I'm curious to hear what you guys think about issuing.
Yeah, no, that's great. Great job.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I can add, it can be a really long meeting where they're issuing like an entire sequence, an entire song. So, you know, if you're later on the sequence, you might be sitting in the room for 2 hours before you go and you're getting a sense for what everyone's going to do before you.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not time wasted though, because it's really valuable to get the context of what's happening in the rest of the sequence.
Yeah. And you especially want to pay attention to your shot neighbors. The people that are animating the shots before your shot and after your shot to get an idea of any sort of connective tissue that you need to be aware of. And yeah, like Garrett said, like, it's not time wasted. Like, you really, or did you say that?
That was sorry, me, but sorry. I know we sound it's really important. Similar.
anyway, I was just going to say, like, don't be shy about asking a lot of questions. I feel like, especially when I was a newer animator, I was like, get in, get out. Like, don't ask too many questions. Yeah. But now I'm like, no, you really got to try to find out as much information as possible before you start.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Ben?
No, I think that's great. It's a, yeah, for sure. With the asking questions, be like, definitely think about it and ask what questions you naturally come up with. You don't have to necessarily like, and I know you're not saying this, you don't just like try to fill the time with questions.
Right.
You're like, because, you know, everybody's in the room. So it's like, as far as like expensive rooms to be in, there's a lot of people. It's like hourly rage tallying.
Right.
There. That's how I think, man. Dollars and cents all the time.
Ben's such a sellout.
Yeah, that's right.
I will say that's actually a good point, because sometimes I feel like maybe this is the people pleaser in me, but I sometimes I'm like, I have more questions, but I don't want to like I don't want to like spend too much time because I know the next animator is going to be mad. So I have to
put
that myself.
Yeah, that's so funny.
But I prioritize kind of what I want.
Yeah,
yeah, there are times where they run out of time and they have to schedule more issuing time.
Yeah,
but don't do that. Ask your questions.
Yeah. It's pretty normal. And you get, I mean, obviously it so depends on the director, like how much talking there is and stuff. I know we've all been in dailies where you spend the whole hour and a half on two packets and then some directors will blow through a whole sequence in 30 minutes. So that's all over the place.
Totally. Yeah.
There really is an art to it. It's like tricky because you also, some people kind of want to like pitch their ideas to the director there.
Yeah.
Some people kind of want to save their ideas because they have something like really specific and they don't necessarily want it to be shot down before they have a chance to show it.
Right.
And there is no black and white. Like the correct way to play it is some hodgepodge of everything and depends on the shot and how like, you feel.
If you're a newer animator and you have some like background character walking, like you don't need to ask what's the character's motivation for like the background character. They're just walking from point A to point B. Don't worry about it.
You kind of want to take all the context clues of like
it's reading the room.
What's going on?
Reading the room
is right. It's tough.
There are like I'm trying to think of examples of clarifying questions. Like say the scene does have a lot of characters and there are background characters, you could ask, is crowds going to handle these characters? Which ones am I doing? And
a really common one that comes up is as we know, seeing something in storyboards versus layout versus when it's fully animated is a very different experience. Mm-hmm. You try for consistency, but it's just the reality. It looks very different when it's fully animated versus not. So a lot of times what will happen is a shot will feel good in layout, but then it ends up being too short for everything the director wants when it comes to animation. Or it could be vice versa, depending if it's like a big action shot and it's like, oh, we actually don't need this many frames. So sometimes I'll ask, it depends. Sometimes I'll just try it and see if it's okay, but I'll first run it by Soups and stuff. But sometimes in the room, I'll ask like, okay, it seems like we want like, you know, X, Y, and Z to happen in here. Mm-hmm. I can try it within the time, but is there a little bit of flexibility? Can I open up the shot a little bit, make it longer? And sometimes directors are like, yeah, it's totally fine. Or sometimes they're like, no, we definitely don't want to open this up. So if it comes down to it, simplify.
Yeah.
So it's a common
like run. Songs are very tight for time. Like the shots are extremely specific because the song is a limited amount of time. So that's an example where like they won't open up a shot. But
yeah, it's a really good example. Yeah.
Cool.
So I wonder, we can stay on this if we want, or actually we didn't talk about, but I think it'd be valuable to talk about when you're in the director, in director dailies, but just showing another pass of like when you've already had notes. You're not necessarily like finaling yet, final.
You're hoping for a final.
Yeah. So like if it's your second showing and the first time you got some notes, how would you handle yourself in dailies? Or what does that look like?
Yeah, usually it would be like starting with some sort of intro to give context to the shot. So you might say, oh, this is my second pass of sequence 210. I'm trying to think of an example of it. Isabella like fighting with Mirabelle. And last time we talked about making the character more angry or like I don't know something.
Yeah,
it's great. Just giving a clue about what the notes were, reminding them. Occasionally I'll caveat something like, oh, like the character's clothes are broken, or I don't know, or like an example of I added 10 more frames. I just thought like we needed a little more beat at the end. Yeah. And so that would be an example of a caveat. And then we'll say, oh, I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. And then the shot plays. And then the director will usually either say like, okay, yeah, I think you hit the note. That's it. Or they can call something totally new out that you don't know. Or they can be like, silence. Or it could be, you know, anywhere in between. Or they could be like, okay, I like what you did, but I think you can push it farther. It could be anything, really.
And the production team will be pulling up the context of the shots. So they'll pull the before shots and the after shots and play it in continuity. Occasionally, you might submit multiple versions. So you might intro that and say, oh, I tried a few different things here. I have two or three versions. And then you might play those through, comparing them. And that can be a little more work for the production person where they're like pulling up each version in continuity. But it's really helpful if you can like label it and say like version one, version two, version three. Yeah. I might say version one, like closed lids, version two, like semi-closed, whatever it is, just like clarifying what the differences are.
And that's another thing that would probably be a conversation with your soup and stuff, because you wouldn't necessarily want to, for the sake of time, dollars and cents guy over here, you wouldn't want to, just like version them to death. But it does happen for sure that sometimes you come in with multiple things. Yeah.
I also think you did something key in this like scenario, which is you reminded the director of what you talked about last time, which does it's like such a good tactic because the director is super busy and the director is working with every department and they don't know, they don't remember like what
they probably have literally hundreds of notes and interactions every day that they're giving.
And it kind of justifies your shot to them. It's like, this is what I addressed and that this is kind of why it looks the way it looks, which helps because then if, I don't know, it just like helps set up the shot. I feel like it's I started doing that. I've been doing that for a while, but I feel like it's a good technique.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It really is. Gosh, that longer I'm in the industry, I'm just like, being a director is hard. It is like, you know, from the moment you get there to the moment you leave, you're just pelted with
meetings and questions.
You got to give your opinion left and right. Mm-hmm. And I just could not imagine. I remember earlier in my career, I feel like I used to be like, oh, the director doesn't remember this shot at all. What the heck? Like, oh, yeah, it's because this is the, you know, shot number 673 that they've seen in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
And they had like a little eyebrow note on it. Yeah. Like they're not going to, you know, give him a break. Good Lord. I was a big jerk.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We can say there is an art to the caveat too, which like we've discussed as a department too, where sometimes there's like too much. And we've heard from some people that like, if somebody's caveating forever, like you just kind of start to zone out as like a lead or as a director,
because yeah, sure.
You're like, okay, let's see the work. But like I'm trying to think of an example of like when you're maybe caveating too much, which is like, maybe it's your first pass on the shot and you're like, oh, I haven't gotten to like finger polish yet, and it's like, well, of course, like it's your first pass, like maybe you,
yeah. a big thing,
it's very case by case, but
yeah, a big thing for me that I'm when I hear people start going down this path, I'm like, oh no, you're just kind of wasting your breath, is when they're like, all right, so I have these six shots, shot 24.5 in the middle, I added three frames, and shot 28.2, I added this and did that. Like, that doesn't mean anything to the director. And at the end of the day, all that matters is that like it looks right. So like exactly, you don't have to get like super granular with them about what you did. Like, the example Katie gave up front was great, where you just kind of jog the memory. It's like, we talked about making her angrier. I took a pass at that. You know, you don't have to say like, okay, I took the lids and, you know, squinted 20% more here.
Yeah.
And, you know, like.
Well, maybe that would have been a note, is like, let's squint her a little more. And you're like, okay, that was. But yeah, true. Anyway, sorry, getting into the weeds. But
no, you're right.
Yeah. And dailies, you submit. Maybe you're in the middle of the list, maybe in the beginning, who knows? And you're sitting in a dark room, or you're on Zoom while everybody else is sitting in a dark room. and they go one by one. And it could totally happen that the shot right before you takes 25 minutes and you are on the edge for 25 minutes because you think you're about to go. It's a whole can of, or whole... I don't know.
Can of whoop ass.
I don't know.
Can of what the hell?
Can of two chicks.
Two chicks.
Can of two chicks. No, but what is the name of the drink we did this episode?
Canimator.
Canimator.
It's a whole can of Canimator.
Wait, I want to ask you guys something. What happens when you go to dailies, you're trying to get a final, and your director gave you a note, like in this example, they're like, Katie, I want you to make Isabella more angry or something. By the way, this is a completely fictitious example, but just for the sake of argument. And you make the character more angry, you show again, and the director says, Katie, I think you need to make the character like less angry or like more sad. Basically gives you a note that completely contradicts the note that you got before. What have you ever been in that scenario, and what would you do in that scenario? I guess that's not a great example, because... trying to think of a better,
it definitely can happen.
Like you address the note, and then they say, "Why did you address the note? Like, why did you do that thing?"
I think like usually you just take it gracefully, and you're not like, "But you told me last time." Like usually,
Katie like carries a recorder with her everywhere.
Oh my gosh, no!
Let's check the tape.
I feel like the more you're in the industry, the more you realize that it can be like a process to figure out the final shot. And sometimes there is some searching that happens, and it's okay for directors to also make mistakes, or maybe, you kind of miss something in the direction, but so you just take it gracefully and try something else, and kind of I'll pay attention to like, are they acting something out? And even though the words coming out don't match what they're acting, like, oh, maybe that's when I see what they're acting out. I'm like, that's slightly different than what you're saying, but I think I know what you want. So actually, that's a really good tip, is watch the director in dailies, whether you're on Zoom or in person, because I do find a lot of directors start acting things. But what about you?
I think that's great. Yeah. Whatever you do, try to check your ego at the door.
Yeah.
Do not take it personally. whatever you can do, do not escalate the situation.
Yeah. Or if like your supervisor told you to do something and the director calls it out, like don't throw your supervisor under the bus.
My supervisor, yeah. Ben.
Yeah. I will say, yeah, Ben, why did I do it this way?
Yeah. No, I think it's helpful too. Like if the chemistry in the room is such that like people can kind of speak up, like
yeah.
I've had situations where like the supervisor will be like, oh, we went for this because of X, Y, and Z. They kind of like back the animator.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know. It's just more of like a, like, I've had conversations like in dailies where you kind of discuss where the shot's been going and why. And yeah.
Totally.
I try to focus as much as possible on just looking forward, not backwards. So it's okay to be like, if they're like, oh, why'd you do this? Like, it needs to be this way. Like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I think it's possible I read the moment wrong or I misunderstood the note. I'm happy to do that. You try to try to quickly transition to like, I'm happy to do that. Let's talk about what you want as opposed to focusing on what I did that's not what you want.
Yeah, because that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
it's not going to yield any productive
results. Yeah. I think it is rare, though, that someone will ask, why did you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, well, but it's not rare that you might get a note that's completely opposite to your previous note. Yeah, that happens a good amount.
Yeah, usually it's just phrased in like, it's looking too this way to me, and I'd like it to look more this other way, you know, as opposed to why'd you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, then you usually just, kind of swallow your pride and just keep going. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm totally happy to try it.
This is part of the reason, honestly, I think like being open and communicating with supervisors and other animators and heads and everything, it's also kind of a nice safety net because if you do happen to be in dailies and you get a thought that's, or you happen to get, why did you do that? You can be like, well, I, you know, looking at the sequence and I was, you know, talking with supervisors and heads and we felt this was kind of the direction to go, but again, happy to change course or whatever. So it's not just, you know, I was off on an island and did my own thing, and it's crazy.
It's where your soft skills really come out, too.
Yeah. But frankly, it's okay if dailies is like kind of awkward, too, because it kind of always is. Like, it's just kind of high pressure. It's weird. So, if you stumble over your words or misspeak or whatever, know that that is totally normal and it's going to happen.
It is so normal. Yeah. If you just like sit in dailies, you realize every interaction is a little awkward.
Yeah.
They're not going to remember this one interaction.
Like, why are you touching me now? I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
It's just on the arm.
oh my goodness.
Beautiful.
All right.
So now post dailies then, how do you, do you guys decompress? Do you guys go back to work? What do you do?
Good question.
I think I decompress. Usually I write down everything because it's kind of fresh in my memory. And I can't like just immediately start working.
Yeah.
Rarely I'll ask a friend like who was in there. Like if I didn't really was confused or something, I'll be like, what'd you think that note was? But usually I kind of just decompress. How about you guys?
Yeah. Kate is gesturing to me. Yeah. Same thing. It usually takes me a little while to like shake off the emotional stress and everything of like so I usually sometimes I'll like go for a little walk or I'll open up a different shot and start working on that instead just to give myself time to kind of mull it over in the back of my head or whatever and then when it comes time to start again and like implement whatever notes I got, I usually start with like the biggest, most destructive things. If it was like, oh, the character's, you know, looking to their left and sitting down, they're supposed to be standing and to the right. You know, I'll like jump on that first before I even, before anything else. Obviously, like I don't, you know, I'm not worrying about like polish at that stage or something. I just broad strokes want to rough in the new idea. And then sometimes when I have, it's like not really ready to be seen by a director or something, but I very roughly indicated the notes. Sometimes I will informally touch base with the supervisor or something and be like, hey, this is very work in progress, but this is kind of the solution I'm seeing to what the director wanted. Do you agree or do you have different thoughts as a gut check? And then if we feel good about it, then I'll kind of keep going. Or if they're like, nah, actually, I think it's more this, then I'll, you know, tweak it and go from there.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely need time to decompress. Occasionally, you know, if you just have like a perfect showing with no notes, then maybe, yeah, I'll like hop right away into polish because you're like, but I feel like even then I still like want to enjoy the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and often dailies might be later in the day and I'm like, all right, I my brain is spent. I'm just going to like come in fresh tomorrow. Yeah. But, and then occasionally there will be like the tiniest note, but they still want to see it again where it's like, let's lower the brows in these 10 frames. And you're like, oh, I think I can like pump that out and like get it in for the next daily. So I'm just going to like go do that right away.
Yeah, sure.
But I think I'm more often like you guys where like I need time to decompress. I go for a walk. I work out. I switch to something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. And I know we've sort of like detracted from like, because I started this with like 9 a.m. I do this and now we kind of do other things. But I think it's because the day, like the normal days, you're just kind of animating and working on this stuff. But then there's these meetings like at different intervals. And those are kind of the things that change up our day. But otherwise, you're just animating. Yeah. Right?
Totally. That's what, totally. That's what cracks me up about like, I don't know, talking to animators at different studios and stuff. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, what's it like there? And like, there are differences, of course, and it's important, like what studio you're at, but it always makes me laugh because it's like, well, 85% of my day is animated.
And that's the same with my headphones
regardless.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And like, we'll go to lunch often together as a group, or there are various groups that go.
Usually at noon.
Yeah.
crazy.
I play Super Smash Brothers with some people, or just one person, Luai.
with some people.
But I'm just, you know, there's a culture of friendship.
Yeah. Yes.
Ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are various exciting things that pop up here and there, like special panels or screenings or classes that you can partake in, usually during lunchtime.
Can we talk about the end when you're like trying to publish a shot?
Oh,
now?
Sure. Yeah.
Like what that's like?
For me, it's like, it is always more back and forth than I think it's going to be, or, just be prepared to get tons of notes and just take them and do them. And, it does feel like a sprint to me often where I show what my version of done is, I think. And then maybe there's like literally like five more back and forth after my version of done. And you're like sending a link to your movie file of your shots to your supervisor over Slack, and they're getting back to you over Slack, or maybe they're really busy, so you target a rounds time like we were discussing earlier and you show it to them in rounds. Sometimes it can be a sprint on a Friday evening or a Saturday evening in crunch where you really, really want to get it done before the week is over.
Yeah, there's usually a point at the very end where it's like, it's just like you and your supervisor, you and the head of animation. Yeah. And it's like, okay, here's my final polish pass. What do you think? And they're like, yeah, just on these two frames, tweak the eyelid here.
Yeah.
And then you do that and you send it back. And they're like, okay, yeah, just a little bit more. And you do it and you send it back. And it's this weird zone where like, you kind of want to do it quickly because they're simple notes, but you don't want to just act like you're like, don't give a crap and you're just pumping it out. So you want to like spend the time and like really go through it with a fine tooth comb. But then, but like most of the shot, you're not changing when you're showing, you know, you're just getting, you know, finalizing these little nitpicky things. And I'm not saying this as a negative, it's just a natural part of the process. Yeah. It usually gets down to, especially if you're in feature film, or I imagine a lot of things, because it was the same for me when I was in commercials too. Where you're getting to like really nitty gritty stuff. And it honestly, for me, that is often one of the most challenging times is for final publish, because you know, once it's published and goes downstream, you essentially that's what's going to be in the movie or the video game or whatever. So, understandably, everybody wants it to be as good as it can be. So it could be a little bit of back and forth, but just stay patient. And then eventually, hopefully you'll get the go ahead to final publish. And then there's usually a number of like technical check sort of things you have to do, or, you know, save the file over here and export a movie here or whatever, that's specific to whatever studio you're at. And then hopefully you publish the shot. Feels and great. You're done. Feels and then you have more shots to work on or
we can share. We often get issued our next shots before we're finished our current shots.
Because they don't want you like
to run out of work.
I also will say that this also really depends on the movie and the leadership you're working on, because there are some movies where getting the final from the director is the easy part, and then getting the final from the supervisors and the heads is the really hard part. And then I've worked on movies where it's the opposite, where it's like, like once you get it final from the director, that's like, it's good to go. So depending on that, I feel like your experience in that like polishy phase can be super different. It can be.
It's a very good point.
I feel like How to Train Your Dragon was like, How to Train Your Dragon 3, it was more like, shots were finaled. And because I think it's because the director had trust that like the animators and the leadership on that team was good enough to like push everything. But then getting it like published was like, that was so hard.
I remember even it was kind of funny. If you got like a final from the director like too early, you were almost like, oh crap, because now like all of a sudden like a clock, like a countdown like really started, where it's like, oh, production's probably going to want this shot in like 2 or 3 days, but I still have a ton to do. And some directors, when it's still like, might finalize it when it's still like even in kind of a blocking stage, depending on the studio again, like everything Garrett said. But I remember specifically on that movie, it felt like that. Some people were like, don't approve it yet.
Actually, that, I feel like that brings up a good topic, which is just general communication. So during the life of a shot, I am like constantly communicating to my supervisor and my production team, the status of my shot, like when I plan to show first look, when I plan to show my next pass, what I think is realistic for delivery. If I think I'm going to miss a deadline, I am letting them know as soon as possible. And I'm very, humble or apologetic about it if it's late notice.
It's a really
But then point. If you're early, you go the opposite. You brag and hold it over their heads. And
oh, I thought you were going to say you like hide and just tell anybody. I mean, more often than not, you guys probably agree. I feel like I underestimate things by like 2 or 3 times what something will actually take. And it's like so hard to accurately predict. And very often the language I use is like, I think I could deliver these shots by this date, but that depends on dailies, which I'm going to show this date, et cetera.
For sure. I'll say a similar thing. I'll be like, okay, I'm shooting for this, but I'll update you depending how dailies goes or whatever.
I'll check in again.
Is now a good time to sort of transition into like what the supervisor, like
that's version a good idea.
Of like, maybe like your side of how that.
Oh, sure.
I don't know. I guess we're kind of going in and out of order.
Yeah, I can talk about it a little bit. I got to come clean with the listeners and be like, I had a brief brush with supervising. I supervised for like a couple months on a project.
Did a fantastic job.
Thanks, Karen. So I can talk about it a little bit, but I think we should probably still have in the future like some heftier supervisors who have done it for a long time. But yes, from a supervisor standpoint, there's way more meetings. So I'll talk in broad strokes and then you guys ask to drill down or extrapolate where you want. But so generally over the course of a movie, a supervisor's responsibilities are like, usually they're assigned to a character or multiple characters, and they are in charge of working with the riggers and stuff to get that character like animation ready. And that means, you know, putting any nice features into the rig that are specific to that character, and then just the basic animation-y stuff. Like, oh, when I close the mouth and lift this mouth corner over here, how does that deform into like an appealing shape or smile or frown or whatever, and all that nitty gritty kind of art directing sort of stuff.
Yeah, and that's a lot of like draw over back and forth. Yeah, right?
And there can be back and forth too with like viz dev, like character design people, mm-hmm. and look development and riggers, but it's usually mainly between the animation soup and the rigger. And then when it comes time for production, when like actual sequences are going into production, again, I think all of this is kind of fluid and can change based on the studio you're at or the leadership you have, but generally, pause for a little hiccup. you'll be like assigned to a sequence to kind of oversee. And then there's this thing called like bidding/packeting where you like break up different chunks of shots in such a way that it's like, usually it's something like, okay, we want to break it up. So this sequence is like 10 packets of shots all around, let's say between 20 and 30 days of work. So it's going to go to like 10-ish animators, and hopefully the sequence will be done in about a month, give or take. So you do that. So it might be like, okay, the sequence is, you know, however many shots, we'll say like 70 shots. And the first packet, there's kind of this big chunk of time where they're fairly simple shots. So the first packet is, you know, it's actually like 9 shots, but it's still only like a 22-day bid. And then the second packet, there's a really long shot and a medium shot. So it's actually only 2 shots, but it's still like a 28-day bid or something because it's mm-hmm. more complicated. So part of that, a lot of that is like heads of animation are figuring that stuff out too. But as a supervisor, you can have some input on that as well. And then you also help, again, this is different depending on studio and leadership, but oftentimes the supervisor helps out with casting that sequence too. And casting is, as it sounds like, you're basically, it's like you're assigning different packets to different animators, and there's a bunch of different things that come into play, like you know, what animators want to do, which is taken into account, which is really nice. You can be like, oh, this is like a nice subtle moment, and I know Garrett asked for subtlety. And this thing over here is a butt joke, and Katie is all about butt jokes. So, like, I'm going to try to give that to her. Classic. So, all of that comes in play along with, like, you know, what else does that animator have on their plate or blah, blah, blah. So, that all happens. And then, so you have the whole sequence cast, and then you go to dailies for all the issuing. So as the animator is asking all their questions and stuff, you can ask questions too as a supervisor, or talk about ideas for whatever and just kind of oversee the process. And then you go off and you kind of handle, and at any given point in time, a supervisor might have like multiple sequences in different stages. So maybe then they go back to their desk and they have rounds for another sequence where people are animating and they're showing their shots, and the supervisor has to give feedback and be like, okay, do X, Y, and Z, and then I think you're ready to publish, or okay, I think you have to do this, this, and this before you show again, or I think this is a great first blocking pass, let's show it in dailies later, or, you know, it's in any mixture of those things, while also handling the people who are just issued or whatever. If they have questions about X, Y, or Z, you'll try to answer those, or make sure everything's ready to go. Like, oh, shoot, you know, in Garrett's shot, his character is holding a sword, but the sword asset isn't ready yet. So you got to tell Garrett, like, hey, can you just use a stand-in for now? Like, sorry, it's annoying, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So all kinds of stuff like that. It's definitely more of a broad oversee the process and kind of keep the train moving position as opposed to, you know, getting into the granular, like, I'm just going to animate a shot and be the actor. You're more, you know, you're more just kind of helping the process along. There's a verb for it that I can't think of right
overseeing, shepherding.
Yeah, they're
all Is it used like do supervisors? Are they expected to animate?
It's a good question. That's something that hugely depends on the studio. So, like at DreamWorks, yes. At Disney, not so much. I think they officially sometimes say like they should animate like 25% of what a regular animator does. Oh, gotcha. But oftentimes it's they get that waived and they're like, no, it's things are so crazy they just can't animate or whatever. And everywhere in between, it depends on the supervisor too. There are some that are like really fast who still animate and some that are fast but still choose not to and but all over the map. So there's that. And then, yeah, they work with the heads of animation and stuff just to, yeah, make sure everything's running smoothly and usually, you know, sign off, you know, oversee stuff as it gets published and whatever and, you know, try to keep an eye on things. So that's generally it. I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting anything big.
I feel like you probably mentioned this maybe, but they also are, they're kind of setting the level of a character that they're working on. Like they're setting what the character, the kind of the style of that character, the personality.
Yeah, good point. I did not talk about that. That's a great,
it's like
yeah.
the fun, creative, like, yeah. oh, like yeah. you do all the like performance tests and kind of like,
yeah.
that sounds cool.
Totally. So obviously it's hugely up to the director, but the supervisor usually is the first one who in animation, who takes a first stab at like, I think the character should like move this way or have these idiosyncrasies or whatever. Which is kind of, yeah, you're right. Which is a cool part. And then they might have like be working with a few animators who are doing tests or whatever. They might do a test to be like, hey, does this feel like the character to you, director, and then get notes on that. And then a big part of their job, which, yeah, thank you for bringing that up because that is a big part of it, is just kind of making sure their characters or whatever stay consistent in the movie. Mm-hmm. So supervisor, I imagine, spends a lot of their time giving like quote unquote on model notes where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, yeah, I saw you do X, Y, and Z. It looks great, but here's how you would more specifically do it for this character. And they usually set up like a character page, which is kind of like a little wiki page sort of thing that animators can go to and see like do's and don'ts for a character, like oh, this character, when you bring their eyebrows down, their forehead looks enormous, so a lot of times we need to like take the scalp and nudge that down too, or all kinds of, it could be any sort of weird thing depending on the character, like oh, this character has got a, from this angle its nose looks weird, so always rotate it the other way, you know, it can be anything really.
It can be inspiration stuff too where they're like, this character reminds us of these movie characters. So here are some clips of movie characters that are really similar that we want to draw upon. And here are some clips from the voice records of the voice actor, actress that we want to take inspiration from. And here's the visual development character design page with all the expressions. And And they'll often do like a, we at Disney call them chalk talks, where they do give a presentation of a deep dive on a character.
Yeah.
And that can also involve a rig walkthrough where they explain some of those nitty gritty things like Ben was getting at. If there's any special controls, which often comes up for non-biped characters. So any animals or creatures or that kind of thing. Just to explain like, oh, here's how this works, or maybe a character has a weird cape or weapon or something. Mm-hmm. Explain how that works with the rig. And
I know we're kind of going long, but I do have a question for you, Ben. Because you're animator and recently did souping for a bit. Was there anything that surprised you or like that I don't know, like going from the nervous animator, like showing your shots, and going on the other side of it, where you're the supervisor.
That's a good question.
Like, did your mind kind of get blown in a way, or did you realize something? You're like, oh man, that's like crazy. That I don't know.
A good question. Yes, totally.
Curious to hear.
A big thing, and actually, I'm glad you asked it because I hope it can be like soothing to our listeners, and because it was to me. I think when you're in your own world as an animator and just doing your own thing and get feedback or whatever, it's so easy to take things so personally. But in like anything the supervisor says or director or head of animation or the shots you're cast and everything. And of course, the way you're interacted with is somewhat personal. You know, you might get a shot depending on your skill level or whatever, or feedback depending on how the shot looks or whatever. But it's like 97% less personal than you're thinking slash is not personal at all. There's so many times when like, because especially on a feature film, it's such a huge, clunky, weird thing that is like, you know, different things are ready at different times. And it's like, oh, this sequence, one third of it is ready. And then the rest might be ready later. This one, we didn't think would be ready for 4 months, but it's actually coming up right now. So like we had these people in mind, but now they're not available. And so it's this big scramble, Tetris, weird like thing. Jenga. Yes. Tetris. Exactly. This weird puzzle where, it's just like, yeah, it's just like bonkers. And I've talked to another supervisor before where they said like, yeah, people take things personally. What they don't realize is how hard it would be to actually make things personal if we wanted to. Like, we're not nearly organized or have the power to make things personal. So just respecting the fact how much is just comes down to kind of luck and timing with casting or whatever. And there's times where people get it wrong too, and they're like, oh, I bet this animator would love this chunk of shots. And then they actually end up hating it, but it was just totally a misunderstanding. And I think how much is, there's so much stuff going on that whenever a note is given or whatever, it's just in the interest, I hope, and I think it's 99% of the time the case, is that it's just in the interest of like keeping things moving and trying to get your shot approved or whatever. And it's not at all saying like, oh, this is because I don't like you or I want it this other way or whatever. It's just like, hey, I've seen the director responding well to this, so please do this, you know? So for me, it's actually been helpful because I think as an animator now, I take things way less personally. And I'm more just like, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just kind of guessing what the director wants.
Yeah.
And are right and wrong often. So don't congratulate yourself or beat yourself up too much either way. So yeah, I think it has helped me chill out a little more because I see how crazy that stuff is. Yeah.
I think that's really useful to hear.
Oh, yeah, cool. For sure. There's sort of two things I would want us to touch upon before we shift away from what an average day looks like. One is going way back to the beginning of the shot issuing. We should talk about shooting reference and doing research, maybe for shots where like you can't really shoot reference. Like, what does that look like? And then I'll just intro the other, which is how do things change in crunch? But yeah, first reference and research and all that. What do you guys do?
Cool. Well, I feel bad, Ben. You've been talking a while. You probably want to break.
Also, Ben's terrible at this stage. At the Ben,
nobody's doing. Well, I feel like with the reference question, oftentimes like creatures or animals or something, that's where using reference for me is harder because I'm like, yeah. I mean, I could look up this like dingo walking on YouTube, but like it doesn't ever fit with like the exact shot you have. So usually for me, I do use reference for like human stuff. And I like shoot myself. I record myself, use it. But for creatures and stuff, I'll look at videos of animals and stuff. And then I will usually do like a thumbnail pass for me. I think that's how I work. Is that was the question, right?
Yeah. Roughly, like, how much time would you say you spend in the planning stage?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like that's very dependent on the shot, of course. And if it's like, there are shots where I've spent like a week and a half just planning, or 2 weeks even, because it's a really long bid and it's a really complex shot and there's a lot of moving parts and you kind of need to spend that time. Mm-hmm. But if it's a simple shot, I will try to get... I lately I've been trying to just execute something pretty mm-hmm. quickly. So I'll like do, you know, I'll do some brainstorming, maybe spend a day mm-hmm. on average, mm-hmm. a day and a half of like brainstorming reference. And I will just execute. And by executing in a deliberately rough manner of like, I know this isn't going to be good. I'm not going to show anyone. This is kind of my like, almost like yeah. post layout pass. It will, things will come up that will necessitate further yeah, brainstorming. Yeah. And then I kind of work in this like weirdly, like very, very rough stage. And then as I go kind of like fine tune things and that's kind of how my process has been. But it, as a result, it kind of makes like everything looks crappy until it looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Anyone, yeah.
You know, yeah. But I'm very curious to hear how you guys, I love hearing about like how other animators work. It's so different. What do you guys do?
Kitty Lo, you don't want to say? Or do you want to go last since you asked?
I'll go last since I asked.
Sounds good. Yeah, it sounds similar. If I have something where it's really difficult to shoot reference, I do love using basic primitives in Maya. I do that all the time. I'm obsessed with it, using like just cubes and stuff to plot out, you know, this dog like running around and jumping or whatever, or whatever it would be. I like it because I can just kind of think about general screen space and timing and not a ton about posing. And then I have that like in the back of my head, but it helps me to kind of compartmentalize then. And then I do kind of I don't actually do a lot of 2D thumbnailing like Garrett does, but I do like hopping into Maya and just experimenting with poses like before I'm actually like animating yet. And I call it like my CG thumbnailing. And that was actually because of, I started doing that because at DreamWorks, I worked on Trolls and Boss Baby, and I would usually jump like right into reference or have like a really specific idea right away. And then I would start posing the character. And like for Trolls, they have these enormous heads and small arms. And I was like, oh crap. Like the whole idea is like, it's maybe not impossible, but it's much more of an uphill battle now because, you know, the proportions I was thinking in my head aren't what's actually here. So that's why sometimes I like doing the CG thumbnailing thing. But so yeah, that's probably my preferred method of planning when reference isn't as much of an option as I do the primitives.
Totally. Yeah, I'm super similar to you guys, where I generally do shoot video reference if it's a human or a biped and act it out myself. And I'll use primitives if it's something that I absolutely can't shoot reference for. And I'll look up clips of animals if it's animals. And I'll also look up clips of previous animation that's been done with the character to get a sense of the vibe.
That's a good point.
Or if there's something that could possibly be recycled or reused, I'll try to figure that out. I wish I did more 2D thumbnailing. It's something I've been thinking about, whether I should incorporate that or not, or like drawing over the layout or something like that. The only thing I'll add is if there's a, like, for example, for like a subtle shot, I might think of very similar movie clips and look those up and see if there's anything to take from those, whether it's little eye darts or breaths or whatever it is. I might look up really good acting because I'm not necessarily the best actor.
Sacrilege.
Yeah. And I will pull like the video record sometimes of the actor saying the line and see if there's anything meaty in there. But yeah, otherwise very, very similar.
Do you guys like when you record video reference, are you like me where you record like 1,000 versions of yourself? And then you're like, I like version 31 in this first part, version 50 this time.
Oh,
like,
yes. Yeah. Actually, so that's annoying. A good point. Yeah. I do splice together takes. Which I remember when I was a student, I was like, what are they talking about? How could you possibly splice takes together? Like, how does that even work? But you just like over time get more comfortable with mechanics and understanding how you can bridge two different takes together. But yeah, totally. I'll play the audio clip out loud. on my phone or iPad or on the computer and record myself and do the take like a billion times. It's embarrassing how many takes I do. Sometimes I ask Ben to do it because Ben's a pretty good actor.
Oh, geez.
Especially if it's
that's true.
A male character or an old character. Ben's good at old character.
I don't know what that's. What
does that say about me? Yeah. And sometimes you can shoot reference for creatures and quads. Even if it's kind of weird, like maybe it's you're focusing more on the general like head acting and you can transpose that onto the creature body or you just want a sense of the timing. So you kind of record your hand moving around with timing or whatever it is. But I guess that's similar to using a primitive. But
and some people don't use reference at all. And they just kind of like go with it. And so yeah, there's like everyone's so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I will say if you're a student, try using reference.
Yeah.
Because there are some awesome animators that don't use it, but I think just going by the numbers, usually looking at people's reels and stuff, I'm like, okay, I can see you can move things around pretty well, but I can tell it's not really rooted in reality. So if you're a student, you don't have to do it forever. But try it for a bit. At least make yourself do a few shots and stuff with reference would be my advice.
Okay, so part two of my question was overtime. What does an overtime day look like in crunch time on a project?
Yeah, so I'll just jump in. You guys feel free to correct me or add where necessary. But everything is the same, except days are significantly longer. So, yeah, and so... And often because of that, deadlines get shorter in number of days. So like overall, it's supposed to come out in the wash with like, okay, this is based on like an 8-hour day. But now since you're working a 12-hour day, now it takes, you know, whatever the math is, you know, 75% of that or whatever. So because of that, things can sometimes seem like they're speeding up way more, like you can get issued on a shot and then it's due Thursday, whereas normally that would be like a week and a half, 2-week bid or whatever. So because of that, basically all the same things, except for in addition to a lunch break, currently at work we also get a little dinner break right around 6 or 6:30. I usually eat for like a half hour and then go back to work and work for another 3-4 hours, give or take. It does get difficult. So I will say it becomes really important for us to like strategize early in the week about, or like on Sunday, like, okay, do we need to like meal prep, do laundry, all this stuff? Like we need to figure out because, you know, once work hits, we're going to have way more or way less personal time. That's in broad strokes. Yeah. Do you guys have anything else more specifically to talk about?
I feel like I was pretty much going to say the exact same thing where like their day to day is the same, but they're just longer and you have an extra dinner. And I think it's more important, more important than ever when you're in OT to take care of yourself with regards to like physical fitness and definitely mental health too. But like what changed my like mental state so much in OT was being consistent about going to the gym in the morning. I think Katie mentioned that. Honestly, it's like, I don't know what it is, but it's a total game changer for me where if I can go to the gym in the morning, it just sets me up for success. Yeah. And I don't know. I think everyone's different too. So you have to figure out what sort of works for you.
Yeah. Not everybody has the testosterone coursing through their veins like Garrett does. You know, your outlet can be different. I mean,
thank you, Ben. I wasn't going to say it.
I'm glad you did. I will say, actually, I do, like you said, you kind of double down on that stuff. I will say in my average day to day when it's not OT, I'm not always the best about taking breaks and stuff. But all of a sudden when OT hits, I have to take that 10, 15 minute walk, you know, here or there a couple times a day, because otherwise it just, I might be okay for like a week of doing those long days, but then I really start to feel it in my body and my mental health. I start to take things more personally. I get much more impatient with myself and others. So it's to avoid that, you really have to make sure you can invest in taking care of yourself where you can invest, you know. It doesn't just mean money. Obviously, I mean, taking the time to do, you know, go for a walk, do your lifting, whatever.
Mm. Yeah. It's hard, man. It's hard for me to describe a day because I feel like I'm still trying to figure out what I want OT to look like. Yeah, every project I like change a little bit. But I usually shift my workout time so that it's more in the afternoon or right before dinner. So I have a bigger break in the middle of the day, or it might be 2 or 3 hours of working out and then having dinner, because I have so much trouble like working straight from after lunch to like nighttime. Like that is a long time and I like really need a break. And I do, in that regard, flex my hours a lot more, where I try to listen to my body. And if I really need sleep, like, okay, maybe I'll shift the next day to 9:30 start and a later finisher. It is a slippery slope, though, where you can just keep trying, like shifting things later and later, or you take a lighter Monday through Friday, but then you add a heavier Saturday. So I feel like I'm like constantly like switching up my strategy and switching up, or like listening to my body and my mental health, or like depending on the difficulty of my assignment too. Like some assignments I can pound away on and have like no trouble like working straight through a day, and others like I really struggle with and really need to take more breaks. So it's hard. That's all I can say is OT gets like harder for me every year, and I'm like less and less willing to do it. or less and less willing to do the same amount of OT, or some people like do Monday through Friday 12 hours a day and don't work Saturday and Sunday. I've never been that person. Like it's so hard.
And you have the weekends, but you're obliterated.
I don't know.
It's really hard.
It's a trade-off though, because then if you don't do that, then you only have 1 true day off a week.
I feel like there's no answer. It's like a math equation that you can't solve. So I feel like we're not like machines, and we can't just like do more with more work. And one thing I was thinking about while you're talking is like, you know, obviously if you're working at a studio that's hopefully paying you overtime you're getting 1.5 times your rate.
That's a huge factor. Yeah.
Which is great. And so I use that as like, okay, I'm getting more money. I am going to outsource whatever I can outsource in my life and give myself some grace. So if that means you know, meal prep, like I'm not going to worry about meals. I'm like going to pay for that. Cleaning. If someone, you know, I'm not going to clean my house. I'm going to, you know, whatever it is. So if you can have things that just be like, look, I'm getting this more money. I need to use it. Whatever I can do to help me get through this. Hopefully you're getting overtime. That'll help.
Totally. Yeah, that's a good
totally.
Point.
Yeah. You're like, damn it, I'm buying the latte in the morning, like the nice latte, and I'm not just getting the free coffee, whatever it is, to get you through.
Yeah, it's very important.
It's hard.
Yeah. So is that it for? We went through a couple different scenarios for what the day could look like, depending where you are in production, whatever.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think that's a pretty decent overview.
All right. We move on to who/what types of people might enjoy the animator position.
It's a big question.
Yeah. If you are somebody who enjoys like observing people and animals,
got me into it, man. And I couldn't stop staring.
Yeah, you like people watching. But like you appreciate if somebody has like a unique little quirk or a little weird laugh, or like stop laughing at me. No,
it's true.
That was a weird way to start this, but
makes sense.
Yeah, like you appreciate very little nuanced behaviors and yeah, maybe you enjoy acting, maybe you enjoy musical theater, especially at Disney, like a lot of musical theater fans.
Sure.
It's not universal, but yeah, a lot of us. And then, what do you guys have to add?
I think that's a great, cute little way to start. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that. But yeah, I think you're totally true. I also, I might back up a little bit and say, don't worry, animators come in all different shapes and sizes and personality types. Yeah,
introverts and extroverts.
Yeah, it really ticks me off. I have heard sometimes some fairly well-known people being like, oh yeah, art school, everybody's there is just like listening to depressing music and blah, 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 and wearing a beret, you know, and like that is not the case in the animation department. We have very jockey sort of sports centered people. We have like, oh man, I would love to be, I aspire someday, but no, I don't think so. No, not really. That was a weird response, but there's people who are super technologically inclined. There's people who are not at all technologically inclined, but come to it more from the artistic side. People who are like super traditionally artsy fartsy, and people who are like not at all like that. I mean, it's all over the map. So I say that
people have all sorts of hobbies.
Yes.
Baking, woodworking.
So I'll just say there's like certain elements of the job that I think if they sound okay to you, mean you would be a good animator, but don't pigeonhole yourself if you're like, oh, I'm an extrovert and I think they're all introverts or vice versa or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not the case.
I feel like totally agree with everything you said. I feel like there's an element of like the fact that our jobs, we said this before, like it's 85% of the day is us spent like behind the computer, like animating and figuring it out with kind of in isolation, just with us.
Yeah.
So there has to be an element of you where you sort of like to like figure things out. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
or, that's very true. You know, yeah.
Almost it's like a puzzle that you're trying to solve by yourself. And for me, I think I talked about this a while ago. I really came into animation. I actually studied film and I did not know I wanted to be an animator, but I was frustrated with film because you need like actors and like permits and it was so complicated and expensive. And like, I had all these ideas and I just like couldn't do them. But what I loved about animation was the fact that you can just like build anything you want you don't need actors. You can just figure it out, get a rig. And obviously it's hard in CG to do that, but I guess if you're someone who likes to create things, but you kind of want that control and you don't want to have to deal with all the, all that stuff in real life and you can just be alone with your process. Yeah. I don't know. It's something about that. I feel like you need to be an animator.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll say I really like the balance that animating gives where you're right. Where I guess I could see where some people are coming from when they say like, again, there's a bunch of introverts and extroverts, but the reality is you do have to be okay working by yourself for a fairly significant amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not always, you know, you have these moments of like extreme collaboration.
Yeah,
totally.
But for me, I love the breakdown of like, you know, I can kind of go off and do my own thing for a week, maybe two. If I'm lonely, I can show somebody and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Let's talk about it. And then there's dailies or whatever. So I love that. But I would say, yes, if you're someone who's like, oh my God, working 2 days kind of by myself sounds like torture, maybe it's not the best for you, at least like feature animation.
Hmm. Yeah. I'll add, if you're somebody who enjoys getting a reaction in general, like that is a big part. Like I love showing a funny shot and getting a reaction. I love showing a sad shot and getting a reaction. Like if you if you like emotionally manipulating the audience, that is maybe a good, if maybe animation's a good fit for you. I had something else. Oh yeah, it was if you enjoy doing deep dives and little research projects, that is what I was getting at with like observation. Like I love the variety that animation brings in terms of the characters we work with, and sometimes you really do need to learn a lot more about a specific animal because you're animating them, whether it's a reindeer or a fox or whatever it is.
A caribou. What's the difference between a reindeer and a caribou? You'd have to know.
But yeah, exactly. So this is cheesy, but I feel like being an animator helps me appreciate the world because I just like am in awe of everything that I see and I kind of study how it moves. And it almost feels like spiritual. But yeah, just appreciate every little thing that you see moving.
Totally.
It's a really cool job because there's just, I think we talked about this a while ago, but it's just like every shot can be different. You can learn something new in it. Like there's just, it's kind of like you're never bored in some ways because there's always something different to do.
Totally.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, let's get to the saucy question, which is, what's your least favorite part of your job? Let's not talk about all this high and mighty animation so great.
Yeah.
What's so shitty about it, guys?
Gosh.
I guess, by the way, I'm saying we're skipping question four, I should say, which is any tips on breaking into animation, because we figured our whole podcast is sort of about that.
Yeah.
We have plenty of episodes. We have episodes on demo reels and stuff like that. And
getting a job. And
getting a job.
Things we wish we knew. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So we're just going to the saucy question right now.
Saucy.
Least favorite. Gosh. I can go. I'm trying to find the right words. But my least favorite part is just that in general, as I'm sure will come to as no surprise to most people, that most jobs in animation are project-based, and that comes with a certain contract length. So it is, I think, very difficult that oftentimes at the end of a project, people are leaving the company or leaving the project or not getting extended. And there might be a mix of some people getting extended and some people not getting extended. And that's like a definitely a very difficult and challenging reality, where, you know, it's lacking a certain stability. You're having close friends come and go. And that's, definitely my least favorite part is that sort of difficult reality. And it's challenging for families. It's challenging for people working internationally. It's very hard, and that's my least favorite.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That probably takes the cake for me too as the number one least favorite. Just to add some other challenging things, I think sometimes it can feel frustrating when you have kind of a lack of control. I mean, we are kind of on the production side of things, so a lot has to happen and be decided before a shot is in our hands and we're animating it, which under the best circumstances is great because you get to build on all these awesome people's, you know, work or whatever. But sometimes can be frustrating when you're like, when a project is chaotic or something, or can be really crunched because X, Y, or Z kind of went wrong or whatever. There could be any number of extenuating circumstances that can translate into really long hours. And sometimes, especially if you're, you know, hopping around and have been on multiple projects that are all kind of quote unquote on fire, it can be pretty exhausting and challenging to kind of go through like crunch after crunch. And you have to really kind of evaluate like, okay, what's important to me? What can I hold on to here? What's keeping me in this? So that can be super challenging. For sure.
Those are really good. I feel like what I have is just kind of an extension of those things. But I feel like for me, one of the challenging parts is work-life balance is a challenge. Yeah. And this is something we've all talked about, but just the hours, you know, and having to consistently do that is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I had something more, but then I lost it. I guess it's...
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one, yeah. Just the, you know, work-life balance. Like, basically having to do crunch. I think sometimes crunch can be easier to do, too, if you're, like, really passionate about the project you're on or something. Mm-hmm. But, like, as Ben was saying, if you're kind of, like, you know, frustrated or you're not aligned with the movie in whatever way, it can take a toll, more of a toll maybe, in a weird way, even though it's the same issue, but you're just kind of more connected with it. So I think from a practical level, like, just the hours, I think I feel like more and more, though, it's not just an animation thing. I think careers and millennials and just like everyone's working more than we should be working.
Yeah.
It's a global problem.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Very true. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a downer, guys. Let's should we pick us up?
Let's 180.
Let's pick us up.
180. How do we end this with?
Maybe what's your favorite parts about the job?
Bummer. I mean, not a bummer. Sorry. I have had too many.
Dos chicas. Good question. Okay, I'll hop in because Katie gestured and Garrett's about to take a drink. gosh, there are a ton of things I love about my job. We said before, the variety is awesome. Yeah. I love, again, this is, I'm repeating myself, but I love the breakdown of like kind of getting to go off and do my own thing for like a week or two. And as Garrett alluded to earlier in the episode, I'm fortunate enough to work at a studio where they're pretty lax about like, they're like, hey, just get it done. But however you want to do that is kind of up to you. I love, so I'll be like, hey, I'm going to kind of really put the pedal to the metal for the next 2 days, but then I'm going to have kind of a chill 2 days or whatever. And I love that amount of control I have. And then on top of that, I still get like a huge thrill out of like seeing something like, quote unquote, come alive. It sounds romantic, but yeah, like, you know, this puppet all of a sudden seems like a, you know, thinking, breathing thing. It still gives me a thrill. You know, I have a really good time doing that. And then, well, I'll stop it right there because I think I might overlap with things you guys might say. So I'll stop talking to you guys. Go ahead.
I love the people. We work with just amazing people. And just across the whole anime industry, I just feel like they're such good people. So talented, so hardworking, such a variety of backgrounds all over the world. I just feel like we work with the best people. Everyone is so interesting, so nice. And I feel like generally I'm very lucky to feel like I have cheerleaders at the studio and I have a lot of mentors and I have a lot of people that I really look up to. So I enjoy bumping into people in the hallway. I enjoy working with different teams on different projects. Like, I just think the people are awesome. And this is also coming from like switching from live action where I didn't necessarily feel the same way. I thought it was more cutthroat and a little more shallow, maybe a little more nepotism in there. Whereas animation feels a little more like a meritocracy of everybody in it really worked hard to get there. Well, now live action is going to come after me, but
it's a valid.
But yeah, I still stand behind it.
That Daniel Day Kim guy just right place at the right time.
I love, you know? Daniel Day Kim. I don't know why that name popped into your brain because I love him.
Choose someone who is like clearly not like.
Gosh, I'm blanking on my second one, so you go, Garrett.
I was just going to say, like, to like kind of like give you some support with that last statement. I just remember going to film school and feeling that environment with the live action side because I went to for that reason, and then switching over to animation, and it's on the 8th floor at NYU, just feeling the like stress like go off me. Everyone was so nice and just like everything was just a little more inclusive and hopefully that's like changed, but I remember that competitive like.
As in, hopefully the live action has changed. Yes. Right? Hopefully animation stays the same. Yes.
I hope it's not as.
Everything was so friendly. It was disgusting.
Oh, it was too friendly. No, the live action side was very weird. Everyone was kind of trying to prove something, and I felt way more, like accepted and just I don't know. Way more down to earth, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
I feel like I hate you guys because you said exactly both things that I wanted to say as like the best things, which was one, I love just like, hunkering down and doing the work. Like I'm such a person who likes doing that on the computer and having to do that. But then on the flip side, I also love the people that we have. Yeah. So you guys took what I was going to say. I have nothing to add. It was perfect.
I'll give a silly, specific thing.
Yeah.
I've told Katie this story before, but I loved when I was little, like pretending to be like animals and stuff. You know, I was always like, oh, let's play zoo and I'll be this or whatever. And I remember there's one time where I was being a hippopotamus. And my babysitter took a picture of me and as a hippopotamus, and I saw the picture later and I was so disappointed. I was like, it's just me with my mouth open. Why? Like, I thought I was like this big, like gaping mouth hippo. Like, I thought it would look more impressive. And I feel like that part of my brain is still there where I enjoy being like
hippopotamus.
Yeah, it's like an animation. Yeah. You get to be the thing. It's like, to me, it's like you're like an actor, but so much more limitless because like, you can be
anything,
you know, okay. You can be a flying blob. You can be the, you can be whatever. And I just love that.
Actually, that reminds me, of my second point, which is I do love immortalizing like some little quirk that we have put in, or like I see Ben in every shot that he does.
Oh crap.
Ben Rutherscope.
No. I
took it the wrong way.
But as your wife, I know your
everything looks a little like a hippo.
But it makes me like cry to really think about it. Like like we went to see I think I talked about this before, the Cirque du Soleil show, Drawn to Life.
Oh, yeah.
And which was all about, like, this father, and he's an animator, and he's, like, well, actually, the whole premise of the show is the father who's an animator passes away, and then he leaves behind these animations for his daughter, and, like, and the daughter's learning how to animate. Yeah, and
it's not a spoiler. You find that out in the first,
you find that out in the first 30 seconds. But that whole premise makes me like very emotional because I do see you in all of your animations and
likewise.
And my friends too. Like I see Garrett in his work. I like we all I think have a pretty good shot at identifying shots by the animators because we just know people's idiosyncrasies and that's like such a beautiful just reflection of our friends, our family, our humanity. And
that's
another thing I love.
That's great. That is great. And that makes me another thing to point out is I think something you said, Katie, a while ago about how getting a reaction is something you like. And I'm like, that is 100% another thing. That's great. Like nothing feels better than like showing a shot and getting like a laugh or someone.
This is just a brief aside. But Garrett, speaking of that, I agree. It's awesome. Do you remember Abominable?
Yes,
do you know what I'm talking about? Can you tell the story? That's like one of my favorite things, and it didn't even happen to me. It happened to you, but it's like one of my favorites.
I just had this shot, and I remember I animated it, and it was this character gesturing over to another character, and it was very matter of in my head when I animated it was very matter of fact. Like I forgot the line even, but it was like, oh yeah, he was over there.
And then it was
like,
gone.
Oh yeah, and it was gone. See, Ben knows. And now everyone's gonna like go back to that shot. And I remember animating it like matter of factly, and just like how it was very like what my reference was. And when I showed it in dailies, like everyone started laughing, and I was like, I looked around, kind of like. Oh yeah, this is funny. This is totally what I intended, but I didn't intend that. But it kind of worked. I was like, okay, cool. But anyways, that's like the flip side of like I didn't necessarily expect a laugh, but I guess I got one there. And I'm like, cool. So you can even have a interpretation of how your shot's going to get taken, and it goes a different way.
That's true.
But that was funny.
That's true. That was hilarious. That was amazing.
Hashtag abominable. Hashtag. I haven't watched that movie in a while.
What? Garrett. I watch it every winter equinox.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
Okay. We want to say something. We put out a call on Instagram for listener questions for this episode, and we got so many questions that were
so good.
Thank you guys so much for sending them in. But because of the time limit, we are going to have to do another episode probably to...
Part two.
Yeah. Just the question.
Because there were so many great questions. We don't want to shortchange them.
You.
So
yeah.
we were like, you know what? This is definitely, I think, justifies another episode. So
yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
To be continued.
To be continued. Your questions will get answered. But I guess let's get into the tip jar, guys.
Yes, yeah. Tip jar. It's a little harder on the cans, the canimator.
The cans are less tingy.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a bit of a weird one. I already told Ben and Katie.
It's a good one.
It's a good one, but it's a little weird. It's not like an animation tip, but this tip jar is all about a thing called carve-outs. And what I want to explain them to you. Explain what this is.
Gather around.
So when you join a studio, you have to sign a bunch of paperwork. And first of all, I recommend reading that paperwork, actually reading it, because the contracts can be very different, you know. But sometimes you'll sign a contract and it will say like something like, we, the studio that you're hired by, owns everything you basically do inside the workplace and even outside the workplace, like out of hours. So basically you can potentially sign a contract that says we own like everything you do while you're hired with us, which is kind of wild if you think about it. That's like a pretty...
That could include your doodles, your sketches, whatever you do in your free time.
I would say this could also even be for like internships and stuff.
Yeah.
This happens.
Oh, that's a good point.
And to be fair, I don't know that it's necessarily studios being malicious. There's usually just a very blanket, like oftentimes to protect them, regardless of the studio. It's like, hey, everything you do is ours. So, and it's often so people can't come back to them and be like, hey, I had an idea like this. You stole it from me. You know,
it's not necessarily malicious. I totally agree. It's definitely not. I actually don't think it's intended to be like, oh, they're greedy and they want to own your stuff. It's just more like a liability thing. They don't want to be sued if they happen to have an idea that's similar to yours and you know, something like that. But either way, you might be signing something where this studio might own your entire, like all your work. So, but you're able to carve out what's called your, like a section of the contract. So basically you can specify things of your own that are exempt from this contract. This is a very normal thing. So you should be able to normally do this. And I highly recommend doing this. So basically, when you sign your contract, do a carve out. And what I would say is, like, even if you're someone who's like, well, I don't have anything to carve out, like I'm just like a student, I don't have any properties that I care about, whatever. I would recommend just carving out like your website. You can carve out your social media. You can use terms like, I'm carving out my social media, including but not limited to my Instagram, my YouTube, whatever. Just like set yourself up so that you have this like paper trail of like, no, I own this. Because you never know. You never know what you might want to do in the future. And
yeah,
I think it's really useful. And I think it's easy as a student to kind of just like not think about that. And then later you're in a tough spot if you really want to like make a book or, you know, I don't know.
Whatever. Especially when you're excited about an internship or job and you're just like, I'm going to sign everything. I just want to get started, you know, because you're excited because it's awesome. You're getting an internship or a job. But yeah, this really is valuable to, just look out for your future self and
Yeah. Some examples. When I signed my first jobs, I think I was still in progress on my thesis film from graduate school. So I mentioned that as something that I was already in progress on, still working on in my off hours. And got that carved out. This can be for new ideas too. So we three carved out our podcast, which was like a new idea that we came up with after we'd already signed our initial contracts and worked with the legal department to carve out the podcast and clarify what it was and that we were doing it off hours and all of that. Usually it is some back and forth with HR and the legal team. Yeah, really good tip to be aware of that.
And I think it's also like easier to do before you start a job. Like you, it's just because sometimes like after, like in the case of the podcast, it was fine because Disney has like a department that does all this. And, but, I think it just can be a little easier, before you start. Cause you're like, no, I own this and put it in there. And, but yeah, no, that's
a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good
tip for you.
Good job, Garrett. Thank you.
It was all of us. It was
Good job, all of us.
How dare you, Ben.
So.
Yeah, that's bringing us towards the end of the episode. We'll do our normal social media plug. I'll do my best. We're most active on Instagram, which is at Animation Happy Hour. You can email us, animationhappyhour@gmail.com, or email us through our Squarespace website. Disclaimer, we do read everything. We're very busy, so we might not reply right away, or we might reply in an episode like 6 episodes from now. But sure. We promise we do read everything and really appreciate all the DMs, all the emails, all the Squarespace submission forums, all of that. So thank you. But yeah, you can find our podcasts wherever you find podcasts. I'm murmuring now because if you're listening to this, you know where to find the podcast. But yeah, that's the normal social media.
I will say we're like debating maybe stopping the YouTube export, like putting it on YouTube. Yeah. So let us know if you...
If you're an exclusive YouTube listener, we want to know.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Oh, I forgot. We also have a literal tip jar where you can... subscribe, like do a monthly tip or a one-time tip for a podcast. We do, you know, have certain fees with related to our website domain and hosting the podcast on various platforms. We have wonderful monthly subscribers already. Thank you so much. Especially shout out Dr. Lowe, my dad. Thank you. you can find that link on our website.
But yeah, thank you for that. This has been Garrett,
Katie,
and Ben. Thank you for listening, and happy.